Okay, so this next interview was with the Reverend Jim Brady. It was at the Anglican Church in Melbourne, the St. Paul's Cathedral. I ended up having a screw-up of my flights and ended up staying there an extra day. And I was walking there with one of my mates, and we happened to go past the church, and I thought, well, might as well go in and see if we can find someone to have a chat about it. So it was all totally spur of the moment. I didn't have any questions planned. It was the only one of the weekend where I didn't actually have any questions prepared. So, yeah, I think it went pretty well. I enjoyed it. Hopefully the Reverend enjoyed it. And, yeah, I just thought it was good to get a little bit of insight of the other side of the fence, as it were. So, yeah, enjoy.
Alright, so your name is Jim?
Jim Brady.
And you are a preach for this Anglican Church in Melbourne?
Anglican Church in Melbourne, yes, yes.
Is there any... Does this church have a name?
St. Paul's Cathedral.
St. Paul's Cathedral,
yeah,
okay.
St. Paul's Cathedral, yeah.
And how long have you been doing this for?
At St. Paul's Cathedral, 10 years.
Okay, you've been enjoying it?
But generally, for 50 years.
Okay.
Priest for 50 years, yeah.
So I imagine you enjoy it.
Well, I obviously, yes.
Mm. Okay, and you are yourself an Anglican?
Yeah, I was baptised an Anglican when I was a few months old.
Mm-hmm.
And... When I was growing up, when I was at school, they had religious instruction, and I sort of went around a few different, Methodists and Presbyterian and others as well, but they didn't do any Anglican, yeah.
Okay. You're aware of the Atheist Convention, the Convention Centre? We flew over from Perth to see that.
Right.
What were your thoughts on that particular event?
My thoughts? Well, I don't know. I suppose my thoughts mainly are just to react to the event.
Mm-hmm.
And I read whatever appeared in the press in The Age about it, which wasn't a lot. I saw a panel last week on the television, ABC, in which they had Dawkins, and I just thought it was a pity the people they'd chosen to have with him. One of them was quite good, and that was McGorry, the Australian of the Year, as a psychologist, and I was very glad they had him there. But apart from him, they had three politicians who I thought were really awful. And a female rabbi, she was all right. The female rabbi and the psychologist were all right, and I was happy to see them discussing with Dawkins. But the three politicians who were there, I was just very embarrassed for the fact that they were there representing something broadly, including me.
Not hard to be embarrassed by a politician.
No.
So
that was the first thing that and Dawkins. I think of the people who I got the website up of the Atheist Convention and just had a look at what was there and so on, and it had the various people who were participating and just something about each one, a statement from each one or something. And I thought the one that impressed me more than Dawkins was Grayling.
I love Grayling.
I think I prefer him. So the one I've been most interested to listen to. And I, of course, I had heard of him before and knew something about him and who he was. But I thought his approach and what he had to say sounded quite interesting.
I didn't manage to catch the whole event. I got the tickets too late, but I managed to just catch Grayling and PZ with the last two speakers of that day. Grayling was he is fantastic. He comes at it from the more ethical, philosophical side rather than the scientific side. How do you just feel about an event like this being held in Melbourne?
I've got no problem with the event being held. You may remember that earlier in the year or towards the end of last year, no, it must have been last year, the people organising the Atheist Convention were rather annoyed and expressed their annoyance in the press because they felt they didn't get the kind of backing from government and other community sources that the religion, Parliament of Religions got, which was held here last year, last November. And I did have some thoughts on that, because I thought the Parliament of Religions is not promoting, not seeking to promote any particular religion, and it's not seeking even to promote religion as such, except indirectly. It's essentially a parliament in which representatives from different religions are coming together to talk amongst themselves about how they can make be more tolerant of each other, understand each other better, and how they can make a contribution together to the issues that confront us all, environmental issues, financial issues, and so on. Whereas I thought, well, the Atheist Convention is really out to promote atheism. It is really there, a head-on sort of, we want to make everybody atheists. And I thought, well, yeah, okay, I've got no objection to them holding such a convention, but I'm not happy about either an atheist convention with that orientation, or any other, any religious convention, Catholic, Anglican, anything with the orientation that we're going to make everybody X.
Sure.
So therefore I felt that, you know, I felt a little bit unsympathetic to the organisers of the, of the Atheist Convention, a feeling they should get support.
I would have a tendency to agree with that. I would not want to see government support for atheist affairs, because I'm a secularist, which means that I don't think that the government should take part in any religious affairs, whether it be supporting religion or critical of religion. And I think if atheists want to remain independent and individual, which is you know, a large thing about what atheists believe, is that we don't commonly believe anything. We simply don't believe in God, and then we get together to discuss, okay, now that we don't believe in God, where do we go from here? And there's no sort of common ideal that we all have to hold to. There's no, like, holy book or scripture that we all have to hold to. So if we were receiving government support, I think that would tie us together in a way that atheists really shouldn't want to be tied down to.
I think almost everybody these days seems to ask for and expect government support for things they do, you see. So, in fact, given the scale and the expense, the scale of thing, putting on things and the expenses involved, it's not easy to do anything without a bit of support from some sort of promoter or sponsor or the government.
But yeah, we managed to do pretty well. For the last day, there was 2,500 seats filled, and it was top line speakers. Obviously, Dawkins being sort of at the top.
You have to have your draw card speaker.
So yeah, it was considering we didn't get any support, we didn't have any sponsorship or anything. It was a very successful event. Are you familiar with the term the new atheism?
No, I've heard the term global atheism.
Okay.
It's,
Well, the new atheism is a term I've more commonly heard it coined by those critical of what they call the new atheism, and it's the idea that over the past 5 or 10 years, atheism's gotten this sort of resurgence, and they're becoming more politically active and more organized and more forceful as a minority. Have you experienced that or noticed that over the past decade or so?
Well, obviously the organizing of the Atheist Convention is the most obvious example of it. And if one hadn't been aware beforehand, I think probably I had, because I'd read about it, putting advertisements on the sides of buses in England. I'd read about that, and that's a year or so ago. I'd read about that in the press, so that gave me some awareness of it. Yeah, no, just from reading about the press and what's going on in different places, I'd heard something about it, yeah.
Well, what do you think about that specifically then, the advertisement on the buses? Do you think that's appropriate or offensive?
Well, anyone, I'm not quite sure. What they put on the buses in England, I thought might have been a little, you know, the message might have been a little almost counterproductive. God probably does not exist, so relax and enjoy yourself. One probably leaves a little question mark, probably does. Two, how do we respond? Relax, enjoy yourself. A little bit self-indulgent, a little bit, you know, yeah. I would have liked to have been something a little bit more.
There is
seeking responsibility, taking responsibility of just for yourself or something. God doesn't exist, so take responsibility yourself. Something like that, I thought, might have been a appropriate message.
They did one sort of that's more on that point, I guess, in the States. They had why believe in God, be good for goodness sake.
Yeah, the Americans are more serious about these things, often the British tend.
There is
more
one going around in Melbourne at the moment.
In the buses?
Yeah, which is atheism, and then after Celebrate Reason, which is done by the Atheist Foundation of Australia.
Oh, well, I'll look out.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but problems around.
I'm quite, I've got no problem about Celebrating Reason.
Well,
look out for it.
Do you find these at all offensive or sort of unnecessarily critical, or did you support them?
I don't find that offensive, not at all. No. I don't find the atheist convention offensive, and so on. I don't know. I'm told that there were quite a number of comedian acts and so on in the convention, but I've got no idea what they did or said, so I can't comment.
Well, yeah, obviously, comedy is about. The thing about comedy is taking things to extremes.
Yeah.
So, you certainly weren't getting any sympathy from them.
That, well, I'd have to wait until I saw some of the examples to pass judgment.
I caught one of the comedy acts on the last day, but I missed the first two, which were Catherine Devney and Sue Ann Post.
Yeah, well, she... Catherine Devney always stirs up. She writes... You're not from Melbourne.
Yeah, but she writes a column for The Age, yeah?
A column in The Age. And she really, she does stir people up a lot. Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I think that, like all comedians, she needs to be careful just how far she goes. I think also that sometimes people who do that sort of thing well, they at least sort of bring things into the public eye and for discussion that otherwise might just be ignored. There's an old saying, bad news is good news because it makes people take notice. So if some comedian stirs up a lot of people talk, you know, about religion and so on, it at least gets people talking. So, you know, I'm prepared to take advantage of every situation that comes up.
Yeah, I heard a debate recently. It was between, I think, Chris Hitchens and a Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, yes.
And a Catholic priest, I don't recall his name. And he said, on some level, I think atheism is a good thing because it causes believers to stay in check and to not become complacent in their beliefs.
No. That would apply to anything. I mean, when we have a government with too big a majority, it can become complacent. And so no one should ever be complacent.
Okay. When it comes to spirituality and religion and matters of the soul, obviously the stakes are quite high. That might be the understatement of the year. But do you see atheism as a dangerous force for state of society and for the state of people's souls?
Obviously, the state of people's souls. Yeah, obviously, if something is persuading people to give up their belief or not have their belief, then obviously, from my point of view, is not good for their spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
As far as society is concerned, I have it's interesting. I had someone else here last week or two ago who was up interviewing me. He wasn't himself an atheist, but he was just interested, and he was wanting to write an article about the whole thing. And he asked me how I would feel to the whole of society atheist, and I found it very hard to answer that question because I said, well, never having experienced anything like that, I've got no idea what it would be like if the whole of society was atheist, because I'm not quite sure where you would go to find such a society. I mean,
well, there's definitely societies where religion is minimal, like Japan and Sweden.
Yes.
Would be the big ones that stand out.
Yes. Again, I've never experienced those societies. So. But I'm not even sure about Japan, but anyway.
Pardon?
Sweden has at least a. Again, you see, when it's that atheist, but if one's atheist, it's very hard to get away from your history.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you have what has been a Christian history and you renounce it and become atheist, it's very hard to get away from that history. It works there in subtle ways, still forming ways people think.
Yeah, because it's
certain atheist regimes in Russia and so on, and communist countries, but somehow the previous Christian culture, whatever, sort of still operating in the ways that people think and behave.
Yeah, well, like I was saying before, I'm a secularist. I would never support an atheist government. The idea
an ideological. An ideologically atheist government, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I think whenever you involve government and religion, it tends to have negative consequences, even if you're a government that is specifically anti-religion, because I think there's an intrinsic conflict of interest there.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. Yeah, it's probably best to keep the two separate.
How do you feel about the Lord's Prayer being said in Parliament House before?
That wouldn't worry me if they stopped saying it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you only have to listen to the way it's said to realise that it's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of not really got any spirituality, any kind of substance behind it.
It has very little spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Ken Ham?
Sorry,
C-A-N-H-A-M? K-E-N, Ken Ham. He's the
person.
He is the head of the Answers in Genesis ministry.
The what?
Answers in Genesis. He built the Creation Museum in Texas.
Oh, right.
Not familiar with any of this?
No, I don't.
He's an Australian evangelical Christian.
Right.
And,
what's his name again? Ken?
Ken Ham.
Ham.
Mm. And, he is anti-evolution, supports young earth creationism. He built the Creation Museum in the States, and it sort of paints a picture of humans coexisting with dinosaurs and a history that only dates 6,000 years back. He also said that the gathering together of atheists in a convention like this, that atheists see the world as meaningless, so it's just a bunch of people getting together at this meaningless event talking about how meaningless life is. Do you think atheism...
Some atheists might be like that. Mm. I mean, existentialist atheists who emphasise the meaninglessness of existence and feel that one has to sort of base one's life on the fact that it is meaningless.
Mm.
Yeah. But I'm sure there are many atheists who have a different understanding, a different approach. Yeah. So, you know, you don't lump everybody. I wouldn't like everybody. I wouldn't like people who are outside of Christianity just to lump all Christians together and say Christians and assume that everybody thinks the same.
Mm.
And so I assume that atheists, there are different kinds of atheists and want to lump everybody together.
I think it's funny, on that perspective, I think Christian and atheists have something in common in that almost every Christian celebrates to some slight degree their own version of Christianity.
Yes.
And everyone, well, maybe not everyone's, but the majority of Christians have these slightly different interpretations. Mm-hmm. So I think it's funny when I hear someone say that someone's not a true Christian. I was like, well, how do you define a true Christian?
Yeah.
How would you...
No, I've got my understanding of what a true Christian is, but I just have to make it my understanding and the understanding of the tradition of Christianity I belong to, and I have to allow that there are other traditions of Christianity which, from my point of view, are either, you know, are lacking or have too much of this or that. But they are still Christian in the Christian tradition.
So is it enough to say you believe in God and Jesus? Is that enough to call yourself a Christian?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Because you have to specify what you think God is like and who or what you think Jesus is. You have to be a bit more detailed.
No worries. Rightio. I'd like to talk for a little bit about your belief in God itself.
Right.
How do you justify a belief in God or over this specific God as opposed to any of the other religions or no religion?
Okay, yes. I suppose, you know, the Jewish and the Islamic and the Christians' traditions all go back to a common source. They're sometimes called the Abrahamic religions or the monotheistic religions because they can be traced historically, well, at least we think they can be traced historically, to someone called Abraham who appears in the scriptures and is recognised by all three as the first person to really begin to formulate something of what we would call a monotheistic and ethical tradition.
Okay.
God, one God who... is concerned with the sort of ethical dimensions as well as being the source of things. And certainly we understand that Abraham didn't sort of suddenly understand, or creationists might understand that Abraham suddenly knew it all, but we see a development in that through the scriptures as we go along. The idea develops and grows, and through with human experience and so on, it is expanded and deepened, and then it goes in different directions. I think the Islamic tradition emphasises the unity and the power of God, Allah, they all, you know, and the Jewish tradition emphasises his special concern for the Jewish people. The Christian tradition is probably the more complex of the three because it recognises that in Jesus, God is revealed. The unity of God is revealed to be a more complex thing, involving a triple, three personal manifestations as Father, Son, and Spirit, Holy Spirit, and that Jesus is in fact the Son of God appearing in human form in the world, and that part of his mission is to sum up much of what's gone before by giving himself back to God out of humanity as the perfect what you call it, sacrifice for all wrongdoing and sin, and at the same time gathering the whole of the human race into the covenant or into the relationship with God.
Okay.
So it makes Christianity a universal religion, which at the same time claims that all the sort of sacrifices and things that were offered in the Old Testament period are all brought to a head and fulfillment in the life of Jesus, and that it is seen then that the essence of the thing is to respond to God the Father with the kind of love and so on that a son ought to have for his father, and to bring the whole human race into a sharing of that that relationship of love with God the Father.
That's, Christ was kind of the first figure that invited the Gentiles into the tradition.
That, I think, would be so. I mean, there were There were before him people who certainly invited Gentiles into the tradition, but they had to accept the tradition as it was. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think with Christ as them coming into it on a new basis, so that the basis doesn't involve a conformity to all the old regulations and rules like circumcision and doesn't involve the exclusivism of the older tradition. Mm. And Muhammad did the same when he... I'm not quite sure how he did, because I don't know enough about it, but the Islamic tradition is universal too. Mm. It expands the Old Testament tradition and makes it universal.
But how do you...
How do you justify the belief? That is the belief. How do I justify it? I suppose I justify it by saying that, first of all, it seems to me that a belief in some sort of God is reasonable, mm-hmm. and that it seems also to me to be reasonable that that there would be, when you consider what is involved in God, God has to be unique. Mm. And then it seems to me that when I look at the tradition as it comes through the scriptures of the Old Testament and into the New Testament, that I have something there which seems to me to have a validity about it, so that I can accept what I read about Jesus as having that authenticity. That I think, well, this is it. You know, here is where I find it. Yeah.
I realise we're heading into some pretty deep theological
ground here. So I'm just skimming the surface.
Yeah. The broadest, yeah. But I would just like to understand why you think... Sorry.
I'll
last one out. Obviously, like when we as atheists, at whatever point we're confronted with the idea of God, yes. and we pursue reason, and we came to the conclusion that it's not justified by reason. Mm. How would you counter that? How do you believe that God is a reasonable hypothesis?
Oh, I would definitely enter into discussion with you, and I would want to know. We'd have to sort of be very, it would emerge in the discussion, I suppose, what you understood by God, what I understood by God. They might not turn out to be the same things. It's necessary that you get the ideas right about what we're talking about, and mm-hmm. whether we reject it or not, are we talking about the same sort of thing?
Well, say God in the broadest sense, as in the idea that there is a creator God, even if that's just complete raw deism or specific Anglican theism.
Yeah, sure.
Because I as an atheist don't think that there is enough reason to suggest that the universe couldn't have existed without a God. And combined with that, no positive evidence for God. So I don't see a reason to accept that hypothesis. Mm. Why do you think that that's false?
I think it's inadequate. Yeah. I think that the universe, for all that I read about the science and so on, mm-hmm. I think you inevitably end up with the philosophical question as to why there is anything rather than not. Mm-hmm. It's really a metaphysical question. I mean, science can tell us exactly how the universe behaves and can push that right back and talk about a Big Bang. But when you get back there, you start to get a bit sort of, it seems to me a bit airy-fairy about things. They're beyond our normal experience, even trying to keep within the realms of science. So, but I think ultimately you have to deal with the question why there is anything rather than not.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the answer is that the source of the things that are is a God who exists by God's very nature.
Mm.
Yeah, and who therefore is able, who creates the world or the universe. Mm. Yes. I can't prove that scientifically because we can't see or touch or handle, but. I find that a satisfying answer to the question.
So you would say it's more reasonable once you get to that point of the beginning of like however that manifests itself. Like obviously it's difficult to say, but the force that you believe is responsible for existence is more reasonably going to be a personal, intelligent force rather than a blind
Initially, I just want to say there is a force, and it's not necessarily just at the beginning, it's operating here now on us equally. And I think it would only emerge from the study of the human thing that I've referred to about, you know, Abraham, the scriptures and so on. It's only there as you got the formulation more of the personal thing. Yeah.
Right.
I think that just from the point of view of looking at the philosophical question, you might be left with the idea that it's an impersonal force about which we know nothing, apart from the fact that we postulate it or whatever pronoun we use is there. But I think that human experience are coming and reflected for us, in, not just in the scriptures, but in other aspects of the human tradition, might begin to give us an understanding of the personal nature.
Do you believe that the state of the human condition in all its complexity is too grand to sort of have emerged from an impersonal force?
Not grand. Grand just means big. The presence of personal experience and personhood, I think, is something that I think is very important and central to human existence. And I think that possibly our notion, our idea of personhood, our experience of personhood, needs more than the physical and biological forces of nature to give me a full understanding or satisfaction in understanding it and why we have it.
And what about the answer of I just don't know? In that, like, it's difficult to comprehend an idea of a completely impersonal natural force attributing to this, but you can just as easily say I don't know either way.
Wouldn't that
be a more reasonable thing?
I can appreciate people saying that, and in some ways it might seem to some people more reasonable. In me, it's less satisfying. Because I'm not quite sure about reason telling you everything. I think reason's very important, as I said before, so I've got no problem celebrating reason. I'm not quite sure that reason tells you everything that you want or need to know.
Couldn't you potentially see it as a more honest position to say that you don't know? Because when it comes down to it, everyone who is a theist may, well, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people who are theists of many different traditions, not just the Abrahamic, but Indian or Greek or Roman or whatever, they might pursue it back to that point. Well, there's something rather than nothing. Why is that? And they attribute it to the gods of their own culture. But you might say, well, it makes more sense to me. But once you sort of define it as that specific, the specific details of a personal god, you're kind of just picking and choosing.
Yeah, I would hope that everybody, whatever they end up saying, I'm sure there isn't a God, I'm sure there is a God and God is this, or I don't know. I would hope that everybody in taking whatever position they take is doing it with honesty and sincerity as they themselves think and feel.
Right, yeah.
So I would hope. No, I hope that I do. And I would hope that everybody else does.
No worries.
And it has to be in some ways a hope, because we're all rather odd and can deceive ourselves. So ultimately it is a hope.
Okay. I'd say that just about wraps it up. Did you have anything else that you wanted to, say?
No
worries. Well, thank you very much, Jim.
It's been fantastic.
Okay, so there you go. That's everyone. That's all the interviews that I did while I was in Melbourne. Hopefully, I will be doing this more often, putting interviews up on my blog and up on my YouTube page, because that's what I enjoy doing most of all. It's why I got into journalism, because I just love the idea of being able to go up to these crazy, like, amazing, awesome people and just have a conversation with them. It's cool. It's fun. So, yeah, I hope you guys liked it. Leave comments. Feel free to throw criticism at me. Send me any questions that you would have wished that I'd asked that I didn't ask. And, yeah, thanks for listening in, guys. And, next time, maybe you guys can offer me some advice on who you would like me to interview next time. I'd like to get interviews up at least once a month on the blog. I haven't been very active in the blog much. I only did it for like the first 2 weeks or something, but now that I'm at uni and I actually have a reason and I'm actually doing stuff, hopefully I can get up there at least once a month with some good stuff. So, yeah, send me some comments, send me information, whatever. Give me some feedback, and hopefully I can provide you with quality entertainment and quality interviews in the future. So, yeah, cheers for listening, guys. See ya.